So good morning. It's good to see that a lot of people showed up for a 9 a.m. session to talk about Windows as a Service. My name's Mike Niehaus. I'm here with Brian McNeil, who'll join us later. We wanted to just try to give an overview of what Windows as a Service is, why we've done it in the first place, and then talk more about how to implement it. So that's kind of the plan as we go through. Obviously, we'll start off with why. We need to understand kind of what's driving us to this. So we've had conversations with lots of customers over the years, and the customers have really told us a lot of things where we need to be more agile. We need to be able to deliver things quicker so that we can address some of the challenges that we're facing. We need to be able to adopt new technologies faster. We need to be able to address security challenges as they come up. And we need to get rid of these big deployment projects that we typically do every 3 to 5 years. So that becomes kind of the framework for this. How do we adjust the way we deliver Windows to customers so that we can address these challenges and respond to the types of things that you are faced with? Security threats, improving productivity, all of these things play into this. So that becomes the why. That's why we're pushing to do this, why we want to make sure that we can make this as easy as possible so that we can get you to stay current on Windows without having to go through the typical deployment projects that you would have done every 3 to 5 years in the past. So with Windows 10, we obviously put a lot of emphasis on security to make sure that we have the most trusted platform, a lot of emphasis on adding productivity, making Windows more personal, because in the end, the users are, it's their device from their perspective. They want to feel that they are in control, and that we provide a lot of support for different types of devices, everything from phone devices all the way up through Surface Hubs. So we have that foundation in place. Now we just need to build this mechanism for keeping it current, keeping it up to date, and solving those other challenges that we talked about. So let's shift into what Windows as a Service is, just to make sure everyone understands the basics of it. We've changed really everything about the way we build, deploy, and service Windows. From a building perspective, we've changed the way we release Windows, the way we preview Windows, the way we show you what's coming. It's now all out in the open. We have the Insider Preview program showing you builds of Windows as we're writing the code. You can see almost weekly, here's the progress that we're making. You can try it out. You can provide us feedback. You can also use those Insider Preview builds then to validate your own infrastructure, your own applications, to make sure that we're not breaking anything. By giving us feedback early in the process, we can adjust what we're doing based on that to make sure that we can fix those issues well in advance. So it's not about kind of the process in the past, which would be, let's go develop a new version of Windows for 2 years and, oh, here it is, take it or leave it. We want to make sure that we do this in the open so that you can follow along and make sure you guide us to where we need to go. From a deployment perspective, we want to change the way we install Windows as well. There's always going to be some scenarios where you need to do kind of the traditional thing, but we want to simplify this, though, to use in-place upgrade processes to service existing Windows installations, making it as easy as possible to keep up to date just by deploying feature updates out to your existing PCs. And from an overall servicing perspective, we want to make sure that the patching process is greatly simplified from what you experienced in the past. We don't want you to have to deal with dozens of patches and all of these complexities. We want to simplify this down to just a single cumulative update that you can apply to bring your Windows 10 PC up to the current point, regardless of whether it's updated last week or if it's been sitting in the closet for 6 months. Patch it, you're current. That's all you need to do. When we talk about the process behind this, we want to provide flexibility as well. So we always want organizations to be able to see what's coming. We'll provide the insider preview builds for that. We hope every organization has at least some PCs enrolled in the insider preview process so that you can provide us feedback. Once we release, though, that starts the process. We hope every organization uses this version right after it comes out to begin doing pilot deployments. For example, we released Windows 10 1607 back in early August. The organizations that have already done significant Windows 10 deployments picked it up right away and almost immediately began doing pilots. Because early in the process, we want to make sure that we can identify the issues, that we can resolve those issues during these pilot deployments, that we can get fixes in place, so that we can get ready then for broad deployment. From your perspective, it's really all about validating your applications, validating your infrastructure, making sure everything's working well so that you can be prepared to do a broad deployment once we declare current branch for business. When a release initially comes out, it's considered current branch. After about 4 months, we'll declare that this is now a current branch for business release. That signifies that we think it's now ready for broad deployment. We don't think any organization should just wait. There's some that are tempted to just say, "Nah, let's just wait until current branch for business and we'll start then." No, you really need to use the current branch so that you can experience the new release, try out the new features, but most importantly, validate your applications and infrastructure to make sure that by the time we do declare current branch for business, it truly is ready for you to go full speed ahead through your organization. From a piloting perspective, maybe 10 to 20% of your PCs deployed with that new release so that you get a broad cross-section of the users in your organization. For current branch for business, that's the rest of them, maybe the 80 to 90% of the PCs in your organization. We then also have a long-term servicing branch. This long-term servicing branch really is for specialized systems. I tend to define specialized systems a little differently than what we have on the slides, to just say that, well, if it's a PC running Office, it's probably not a specialized system. It's a PC then being used as an information worker PC. Those information worker PCs want to get the latest capabilities as quickly as possible. Therefore, they should be on current branch or current branch for business. These specialized systems really would be factory floor PCs used to control machinery, ATM machines, machine PCs controlling high-end medical equipment. Those types of special use where you don't want any change to happen to that PC over a long period of time, except for security updates, that's the type of thing that we want with LTSB. We want that to be a small subset of the PCs in the organization, but not the general population. So the challenge, if you use that in the general population, now you're kind of getting back to that big deployment project routine again, where every few years now you have to go to another new LTSB release in order to try to stay current on those PCs. So the expected process that we would suggest to customers is to follow along through the Insider Preview program. What we're doing behind the scenes as part of that is creating a new build of Windows pretty much every day, validating that inside of Microsoft with large populations of users, tens of thousands of PCs, and then periodically making that available to the several million insiders out there. We have a slow ring and a fast ring for insiders, so you can get a build every week, maybe you can get a build every month. Just depends on how frequently you want to see these. Once we get to the release point then, it's all about piloting by creating hopefully several pilot groups to keep expanding the deployment of this new release inside your organization. First pilot group is probably IT. Let's start with IT itself, deploy the new version to it, learn how the new features work, experiment with it, see how the actual users are going to react to it, and then start expanding beyond that to groups of users inside the organization. Hopefully those are all volunteers that are participating in this process without being forced into it, And they're the types of people that if they run into issues, they'll pick up the phone and call the help desk, not pick up the phone and call their vice president to say that we're having an issue. You want them to be willing participants and partners with you as part of this piloting process. After about 4 months of going through those pilots, then we should be to the point when we declare CBB to do a broad deployment. Once we're talking about broad deployment, it's really about risk reduction. We want to make sure to not do the entire accounting department or the entire HR department at once. We want to break it into multiple components and do sections of it at a time. When we talk about patching, we have some challenges. With Windows 7 and Windows 8.1, a lot of you selectively patch your PCs. You tend to deploy all the security updates that we release, but not all of the non-security updates. So it kind of leaves us in a situation where we've got all of these PCs that have different collections of patches applied to them. But when we release new fixes, we're validating that against a fully patched PC. So we have a tendency of running into issues because of these varieties of PCs that are out there. Every single PC could be different. We can't possibly test all of those variations. So that's why we focus on a fully patched system. With Windows 10, we solved this just by moving away from the pick-a-patch model. Let's instead just use a single cumulative update containing all the security and non-security updates. Each new one that we come out with supersedes the previous one. So as a result, you just need to install the latest update to be fully patched. This goes away altogether. We're looking at some changes for the download servicing as well on Windows 7 and Windows 8.1. You may have read about those or heard me talk about those earlier in the week. Just to try to address these types of challenges. But with Windows 10, we've completely redesigned the way that we do this to avoid these types of challenges. When we talk about updates, we use two different terms: quality updates, which are the monthly patches that you're used to, and feature updates. Feature updates are the new releases, like 16.07, that add new features to Windows 10. For the quality updates, as I mentioned before, single cumulative update each month on Patch Tuesday, containing security fixes, reliability fixes, bug fixes, all types of fixes rolled together. Always supersedes the previous one. There's no new features added into them. We do have a program called the Security Update Validation Program that you can sign up for to get preview versions of the security releases, which gives you an extra week or two to actually test out these fixes before they're released publicly. So if you want to have some more time and help us validate these updates before we release them, let us know. We can sign you up for that. Because there's some amount of sensitivity with these new security updates, it does require a non-disclosure agreement and that type of thing. So there is some paperwork involved in that, but we are always looking for more customers to participate in that program. The quality updates, it's also worth mentioning that we tend to simplify it a little bit when we're talking about one new update per month. It's actually a little bit more than that. We'll release updates on other at other points during the month, but never with any security fixes. The security fixes will be in the Patch Tuesday update, but other Tuesdays in the month, you may see additional updates with new non-security fixes in them. That allows you to do deployments of those non-security fixes to potentially a subset of your population to validate those non-security fixes before the next Patch Tuesday, because the next Patch Tuesday, the update containing the new security fixes, will also have those non-security fixes in it as well, since everything is cumulative. So watch the pattern for the patches coming out. Make sure you see how the rhythm is going and be looking at each one of those as we release them and do some deployments inside your organization so that you're not introducing as much change on Patch Tuesday. We then have feature updates, generally 2 to 3 times per year. We've built this process to be as robust as possible to make sure that we can maintain all of your existing configuration, all of your settings, all your data, all your applications. If anything goes wrong, we can always roll back to the previous installation. So it's designed to just be simple. Run this simple process, you're now running Windows 10 1607. We're updating our deployment tools to support that with System Center Configuration Manager, MDT, WSUS, Windows Update for Business. All of them support doing this type of feature update deployment. We'll talk a little bit more about those tools as we get deeper into this, but we want to make sure that this is as easy as possible so that you just focus on building your rings, building your groups of PCs, and expanding out the deployment based on feedback you're getting from your own users. When we look at this from a timeline perspective, we'll go through the insider preview process for roughly about 6 months. I mean, it depends on when we're actually going to ship, but it's averaging out to around 6 months of active development before we do a release. We then get into the pilot process, which is about 4 months before we declare current branch for business, saying that this is now ready for broad business deployment. And then you've got at least 12 months to deploy and use it. Now, we would say at least 12 months because our rules are based on the number of releases that we have supported in market at all times. We'll always support two CBB releases. So when we declare that third CBB release, that then causes the first one to no longer be updated. The result of that is that it can vary a little bit based on our release schedule. But we will guarantee that we'll have at least 12 months, plus we've added an additional 60-day grace period to the end of this. So after we declare that third CBB, you'll still get 2 months of security updates for that N-2 release. That's the view of one of these. When you start to stack them on top of one another, you start to see more of a pattern to it. We start to get into this rhythm where we're looking at insider preview builds from one release, potentially while we're piloting a release and broadly deploying and using a third release. When you start seeing these stacked on top of each other, you kind of start to see the pattern evolve. So right now we've got 1507, the original release. We're well into the deploy and use phase of that. 1511 that came out in November, 1607 that came out at the beginning of August. Now we're still in the CB phase for 1607, so we're still within that pilot timeframe. But we will probably in the November-December timeframe declare that as current branch for business. At that point, that would signal that we're into the grace period for 1507. So after a couple of months then, we would no longer be updating 1507 with new patches. A lot of customers will ask, well, can I skip one of these? And our general answer is, well, yes, but you probably don't want to. So imagine you're running 1507 today and you wanted to skip over to 1607. Technically, you could do that, but if we look at this from a timeline perspective, you wouldn't want to start deploying it until we've released it, and you need to finish it by the end of that grace period. So you could potentially skip a release, but in order to do that, you have to deploy every PC in your organization within a six-month period of time. That's a little cramped. So we would much rather you deploy each of these releases as they come out to avoid that sort of challenge. Now, if you have some PCs that maybe you find an issue that prevents a PC from going from 1507 to 1511, and as you're working with an ISV or with Microsoft to resolve that issue, you're not able to take that PC to 1511, well, okay, maybe a small number of PCs are pretty easy to move from 1507 directly to 1607, but you don't want to do that with a significant percentage of the PCs. So let's talk then about how. So we've talked about conceptually building these rings and doing deployments first in pilot rings and then in broad deployment rings. So how do you do that? It's useful to look at this from the perspective of a typical deployment project. Most organizations went through deployment projects every 3 to 5 years, and these would be big projects. Lots of staff, lots of people pulled away from their day-to-day jobs inside of IT and forced to focus on validating all the applications, updating infrastructure, building a deployment process, building new images, four basic components for all of these deployment projects. Big work every 3 to 5 years. What we want to shift this to, though, is a much smaller project much more frequently. When we look at this comparing two of those, going from the traditional project to the current Windows as a service model, we want to eliminate the imaging expense. You don't really need to use a golden image to move to the latest feature update. You're just going to deploy it using an upgrade process, using the in-place upgrade engine that we built. As a result, the deployment process is simpler, the image need is eliminated. Now, you may still create an image anyway because you're going to use it for bare metal deployment or break fix or other scenarios, but to update your existing PCs, you just do a simple in-place upgrade deployment. So that part's simplified. We've been working to simplify the infrastructure side of it as well, so that there's lighter dependencies on Windows Server and Active Directory. We've made Configuration Manager much easier to keep up to date with their current branch model that they've implemented. So we've tried to simplify that as well. And the deployment process, obviously, is simple because you don't have to worry about reinstalling applications and re-injecting drivers. It's all preserved by the upgrade process. So we think this is realistic, but there's one piece that kind of stands out to most customers when they look at this. The applications. Everyone looks at these new releases and says, oh, it's a new release of Windows 10. 1507, 1511, 1607. We need to retest everything. It's just not practical to do that because you all have lots of applications. I think the typical number for enterprises is in the thousands. So testing thousands of applications every 6 months or so as we release new feature updates really isn't practical. The other challenge that we've seen from customers is that you go through that testing process. Like, let's say you were working on deploying Windows 7. It's probably what most of you deployed most recently. You went through and tested all 3,000 applications in your environment. You proved that they all worked on Windows 7. And then you were so confident in your testing, you immediately started deploying at full speed, right? Well, no one deploys at full speed. Everyone then would start doing pilot deployments and building out the ring. So you're familiar with the concepts of that already. You've already been doing that. So let's say you did all that 3,000 application testing. Maybe it took an hour per application. That's 3,000 hours of work. Who knows what your hourly rate is, but that's a very expensive proposition. And even after you did that, you weren't confident enough to do broad deployment starting right away. So what we're suggesting instead is let's flip that around a little bit. Let's test just the critical applications and then leverage those same pilots that you were already doing to slowly validate the rest of the applications through real-world validation. Let's just deploy to users, let them go about their normal jobs, and because compatibility is very good overall, we don't expect there to be many issues, but if there are, make sure the people pick up the phone, call the help desk, and let you know about them. React to the issues rather than trying to proactively test to validate those. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute, but we want to get into that simplified process where we're not spending 18 months trying to get ready and then 6 months to deploy. No, we want to spend 6 to 12 months deploying so that we can get into this rhythm much more easily. So we want to make sure everyone has insider PCs. We know most organizations will have some specialized systems, some special PCs that kind of need to be separated out and moved to the side. Those will use an LTSB release. But then we need to work on the piloting side. We need to recruit volunteers who will cover the broadest range of applications and devices that are out there. So it's not going to be 200 people from one department, it's going to be 20 people from here, 20 people from there, 20 people from there, just so that we get coverage of the broadest set of apps. Once we get through that pilot process, now we'll do broad deployment, but the emphasis shifts. We've already covered the broadest set of applications. Now we just want to make sure that we reduce our risk as much as possible to make sure that we continue to service the business well. So kind of to summarize then, we have the current branch release, first 4 months of its lifetime, used for pilot deployments. Current branch for business, used for broad deployment. It's not like these, though, are two different things. They're really the same thing at different points in time. 1607, when it was originally released, is considered current branch. It becomes current branch for business after 4 months. It's the same bits. So the only difference between the current branch 1607 and the current branch for business 1607 is the installation of the latest cumulative update that fixes any issues that we might have found in that 4 months. So if you're going through and applying these patches regularly, which you all would be, you would already be running the equivalent of current branch for business before we would even tell you that it was current branch for business. That cumulative update that we would use as kind of that baseline to say, here's what we consider the current branch for business release, you've already deployed. So you'll see us release updated media when we declare current branch for business. We'll publish that to the Volume License Servicing Center, but it's pretty much just as a convenience. It enables you to download a new ISO that contains that cumulative update injected into it, but otherwise it's the exact same bits as 1607. Including that additional update. Otherwise, pretty much everything is the same. We do need to point out that there are some differences with the long-term servicing branch. We'll talk about those a little bit as we get deeper into this. But for current branch and current branch for business, pretty much it's as you've seen, as you've experienced. But from an LTSB perspective, there may be different servicing bars on those. So you may see over time that there are a lot more fixes released for current branch and current branch for business compared to LTSB. The goal with LTSB really is stability. We want to make sure that it is as stable as possible, that it's not going to change, that it's not going to impact these specialized devices that it's running on. So it's a different model. We want to remove anything from LTSB that has the potential to change. So if you look at this visually, if you were to install Windows 10, 15, 11 and compare it to LTSB 2015, which would be the previous release, 2016, which will show up on VLSC within the next few days, you won't see the same thing because we remove Cortana, Edge, the Windows Store, and all of the inbox applications. Most of the inbox applications. There are a few that are critical to using Windows 10, like the Settings app, so that's still included, but most of the others are removed. That then results in a pretty different look when you look at the start menu on a clean installation of these. So make sure you understand the differences, make sure you understand what you're giving up if you go with an LTSB installation. From a deployment perspective, we want to simplify the process as much as we can. And we do that with all the different tools, but in order to do that, we need mechanisms for specifying what should this PC get next. It's not really a question of what it's running today, it's when should it get the next release when it comes out. So we have policies in place that allow us to specify that. We can configure a particular PC via GPO or MDM to say this PC should be considered a current branch PC or a current branch for business PC. In Windows 10, 15, 11, we had a policy called defer upgrades and updates. In 1607, we actually have a new set of policies that do the same thing but are a little more granular. But that allows you to specify, where do I want to go? Do I want this PC to become a current branch PC? Do I want it to get current branch for business? The same basic policy is used for Windows Update for Business, for WSUS, and for Configuration Manager. all of them use this particular setting to determine, is this a current branch PC or a current branch for business PC, just so that they know what to target next to that PC. So the deployment process then, we want to validate apps and infrastructure. We want to do our pilot deployments. We want to react to feedback and then deploy to the broad population. That's the rhythm that we want to get into. That's the process that we want to implement. From a compatibility perspective, the reason that we can say that we want to test less is really related to just the focus on compatibility overall. If we look at the results that customers have been reporting to us, our early adopter customers have gone through and done much more testing than we think they really needed to, but they wanted to feel good about it, so they'll test thousands of applications. The typical response back from those customers is, we're seeing 99% compatibility rates on our applications, sometimes even higher. Yes, we see a few issues here and there. The typical things that you would expect, things that are hooked into low-level operating system components like antivirus software, tends to be the biggest violator of the standard developer rules, and they use undocumented APIs and hook into the OS in non-natural ways. So those have a tendency to need updating, so you'll probably find a few like that, but most applications will just work. Because we've made minimal changes to the Win32 APIs, we've been monitoring the insider feedback, both from people submitting issues as well as the telemetry that we get to indicate applications that are having issues, like any crash data that we get back. So we have a pretty good idea of what's going to happen with the applications. We're going to make sure that we maintain that. That's a big focus for us, to make sure that we can keep a very high level of compatibility. But that's for desktop apps. Websites kind of become a different story. We have two browsers included in Windows 10, really to address that particular issue. We know you have a lot of legacy applications, and you probably validated those and continue to use them with IE11. We added new enterprise mode capabilities to IE11 in Windows 7, Windows 8.1, and Windows 10. So that you can address the website compatibility issues on Windows 7 and make sure that those same behaviors will be present in Windows 10. So we want you to be able to use Microsoft Edge for modern HTML5 based websites with the best compatibility that we can possibly build. We've changed the approach that we use for web compatibility to make sure that we try to stay as compatible with the other industry browsers rather than focusing on the spec says it should do that. We don't see the other browsers implementing the spec correctly. Well, what developers really care about is they're going to develop for a particular browser and hope that the others behave the same. So we've changed our approach to say we're going to try to cooperate as much as possible with Chrome, with Firefox, and to make sure that we can have that highest level of compatibility. But for the older stuff, we still include IE11, we still include enterprise mode, so all of your web applications that work fine on Windows 7 with IE11 work fine in Windows 10 with IE11. We've even added some new capabilities for enterprise mode to work with both of those browsers together. So via policy, you can configure the PC so that if a user launches Edge and types in a URL that isn't compatible, it will redirect to IE. They can then work with that web page in IE, and because, of course, most users won't necessarily know that they switched to a different browser, they'll go up to the address bar and they'll type in the next website that they want to go to. If that one doesn't require IE, we added a new policy in 1607 for IE, to say redirect that back to Edge. So we want you to use the best browser for the particular website that you're accessing. For most new stuff, that should be Edge. For these older applications that need compatibility, that's IE11 with enterprise mode. On the hardware side, compatibility is pretty strong as well. Windows 10 should run on any hardware capable of running Windows 7. We have the same hardware requirements, the same driver model, so most things should work. there may be the need for some driver updates, but most of that is handled as part of the upgrade process. As you go through an in-place upgrade, any incompatible drivers can be dropped and replaced with the in-box drivers provided by with Windows or additional drivers that are available on Windows Update. We've also been working on the other half of the challenge around applications, which is support statements. Most of you say, well, okay, I can see that it works, but my ISV won't tell me that they'll support it running on Windows 10. So we've been reaching out to all of these ISVs to make sure that they are aware of all the interest and all the deployments going on with Windows 10, that they see how their applications are being used on Windows 10, and that they issue proper support statements for Windows 10 and Windows as a service. To make those easier for you to find, we created a website called readyforwindows.com. Readyforwindows.com has a directory that you can search for any vendor, for any application, and it will give you a link to that particular support statement for any application. It actually even goes further than that. Let me actually see if my machine is awake here. It keeps going to sleep. But we'll take a look at that in a minute. We also have usage data, so we can see what versions of the application are in use on the internet and how many people are actually using it based on our telemetry. If you see an application that's being used on hundreds of thousands of PCs, you probably don't need to worry about testing it. It's already broadly used, it's widely adopted, it's being run on Windows 10. So you can then focus on applications that are less tested. So the validation process we hope most organizations will go through is to maintain an application portfolio. You need a list to start with of all the supported applications and websites inside your organization. Hopefully you already have that. Once you have that, you can then prioritize that by criticality. We really want to focus on the top of that list, the most business critical applications. If these applications didn't work, your business would shut down. That's the focus. Test those explicitly, make sure they work, but then let's try to do the rest via piloting. Structured testing for critical, reactive response for everything else. Do the deployment, wait for the phone to ring if there's an issue, address the issue, and then continue on expanding your pilots. That's the process that we want to get into. We're trying to help with that process by building additional tools, including Windows Upgrade Analytics, which is leveraging that same set of telemetry to show you here's what's in your environment so that you can see here are my devices, here are the applications on my devices, here are the drivers that are being used on those devices, and here's what we know about those. We know that there are issues with these, and here's how to remediate those. So it's all about exposing that data and letting you do this work in advance to remediate those issues so that you're ready to do the broader deployment. If we look at Windows Upgrade Analytics, it's a tool built around the Operations Management Suite, an Azure service. It's available for free. You just need to go in and sign up. Once you've signed up, it requires that you do a little bit of configuration on your PC so that they send telemetry to us. That can be from Windows 7, Windows 8.1, or Windows 10 PCs. We just require that you tag the PCs to indicate what organization they belong to, because otherwise our telemetry is anonymous and we can't tell whose PCs are whose. But if you tag them, then we can show you all of the PCs that have that particular tag on them. So we can show you the total computers that you have, the number that have already been upgraded, so you can follow along a summary of that. We can identify PCs that would be pilot candidates because they have no current issues. We can identify the applications in your environment and be able to tell you which ones are broadly used, which ones have low installation count, which makes piloting a little bit more challenging because you'd have to make sure you include people that run that application in your pilot. We'll show you any known issues that have been reported to us by ISVs or that we've found in our own testing. So you can then drill into that list of applications, like the ones that have a fix available, and be able to see, well, what is that fix? And deploy that fix in advance of doing that particular upgrade so that we can make sure that it's as smooth as possible. But it's all about getting us ready then, going through the pilot process, resolving the issues with applications and drivers, to get us to the point that we're ready to deploy. For the deployment, we want to identify all the PCs that have no issues. Once we have that list, we can take that list and export it. So we have the ability to export that and import it into System Center Configuration Manager. Let's build a collection of those PCs, and then let's target that set of PCs. So trying to make this a full circle process from the initial discovery through the remediation steps, and then finally into the deployment process itself. So it's a useful tool, definitely try it out. It's easy to sign up for. There are instructions on TechNet on how to set it up. You just need to make sure that if you're using Windows 7 and 8.1, there's a couple of hot fixes to install. For all the OSs, there's a registry value that needs to be set to indicate these PCs belong to your organization, and then you'll start to see the data show up in Upgrade Analytics. The Ready for Windows site, the data that's in Ready for Windows is now actually integrated into Upgrade Analytics as well. And we've also added recently the ability to inventory the websites that are being used in your organization. So those are new capabilities added. But let's take a quick look at Ready for Windows just to show you the type of data that's available there. Where I could search for a particular vendor, maybe Cisco, look at one of their applications, see that it's supported on Windows 10. We have a link then directly to their support statement, and we have data on all the different versions of this particular application that we can see via telemetry. If we see versions that have insufficient data, it just means that we haven't seen that particular version running on a lot of PCs. But when we get to some of these, we would see that they're adopted or broadly adopted, which would indicate that these are a fairly popular application and probably don't need as much validation. Maybe we looked at one from Citrix. Citrix Receivers, fairly popular. We can see on some of these that it even indicates that it's highly adopted. So we can see that that's on many thousands of PCs. Running this successfully on Windows 10 with no reported issues, it's probably not an application that you need to worry about because it's already widely used. So those are the types of tools that we're working on. We're continuing to enhance those. Since these are web-based services, we can continue to iterate on those even faster than we do on the Windows 10 releases. So expect to see new features and capabilities added to these frequently. So let's talk then about distributing content. When we're talking about the feature updates, we're talking about a fairly large package. We've got about the 3.5 gig payload for an x64 operating system when we're doing a feature update. How many of you were in my session on size yesterday? So we basically spent 75 minutes just talking about that particular topic and talking about using peer-to-peer tools to help with the distribution of that. So we can enable branch cache, delivery optimization, and even the new config manager peer-to-peer capabilities to do fan-out distribution of these larger sets of content out to all the PCs in your organization. Right now, the bottleneck is typically your data center and the distribution points in that data center. So we want to push the content out to the edges of the network, where one PC can grab the content and then start sharing it with other PCs that are on that same subnet. We can use branch cache with WSUS and Config Manager. We can use delivery optimization with Windows Update for Business and WSUS, and then Config Manager has their own caching mechanism that's currently in preview that will enable peer-to-peer sharing with their future release as well. By implementing those, we can really drastically alter the amount of network traffic that comes back to the data center. The typical testing that we've performed has shifted 90% of that out to the edges of the network. So it's a pretty significant change for a fairly minimal investment. Setting up branch cache is really easy. All it takes is enabling the component via group policy and setting a few firewall rules. Enabling delivery optimization is even easier. It's on by default. So if you're using WSUS, Windows Update, or Windows Update for Business, you'll automatically get sharing. We have a variety of controls and policies available for delivery optimization to control that. You can check out my other session where we got deeper into that conversation. So I think this is a really good idea to implement something like this to help with the distribution of content. There are other things to do as well, like express updates and scheduling to make sure these upgrades happen after hours, and a bunch of other things that can be used to help with this. But making sure that you have the infrastructure and the tools in place to effectively distribute this content is an important thing to set up. So then we want to talk about tools. We have a variety of tools. I've mentioned them as we've gone along, but just to give you a summary of the tools that are available, we have Windows Update. Windows Update generally is used for consumer PCs. They point directly to Windows Update and get new updates as they're released. It is a cloud-based service. It does use delivery optimization for peer-to-peer, and for some versions of Windows, it's the only option. We then have Windows Update for Business, which is a kind of another layer on top of that, where you get more control over the Windows Update process. You still have your PCs being updated from the cloud, still using delivery optimization to do peer-to-peer distribution, but you can specify for the different rings of PCs, when do I want these particular updates to deploy? Most of you today probably have an existing patching tool in place. A lot of people use WSUS. Those that don't are probably using System Center Configuration Manager. There are some other third-party products out there that you might be running. Those are generally all on-prem solutions. In the case of WSUS and Config Manager, they both provide peer-to-peer capabilities with branch cache, delivery optimization, or Config Manager. There are some hot fixes required on WSUS to support Windows 10 and the feature updates, but make sure you read through the release notes on the KB articles that talk about extra manual steps that you need to do for that. So those are the tools. Now we want to spend a little bit of time looking at each one of those tools so that you understand really what that looks like. How do we set up these rings? How do we do the deployment? We're going to start off with Windows Update for Business, and Brian McNeil will come out and talk about that one.
Thanks, Michael. Really appreciate the time today. So Windows Update for Business. We know this is new. We know there are a lot of questions. We've gotten a lot of feedback as we've been building this feature. We've been putting this together. But we wanted to give a little bit of an overview to everyone here today, just to give you a taste of what Windows Update for Business is and give you some pointers as to where you can go find some more information if you're looking for it. A few things right off the bat. What we're really trying to do at Windows Update for Business is work hand in hand with this Windows as a Service model. We want to make it easy for you to be able to deploy these quality updates and these feature updates and be able to do it in a manner that's hands-free. When we say hands-free, we really mean you're going through, you're setting up your environment, you're setting up your rings. Then you basically sit back and you can watch your reporting tools, you can watch your dashboards as things just flow through your enterprise. But you also still have those controls in there to be able to mitigate a problem if it occurs, when things get deployed, how you do your testing before things get deployed. All of those same controls that you get with some of these on-premise tools are still there with Windows Update for Business. The last thing is what we're really trying to do is simplify your infrastructure. Because we're using Windows Update, we have the ability to say, we can make changes to the service in the cloud for Windows Update, and since Windows Update for Business is all built into the OS, we can rapidly do these changes and provide new value and tools to you. But what we don't have to have you do is go deploy a new server, go deploy these other tools to make it happen. It just comes with the OS. So what I wanted to do is walk through just some things that we've changed since the anniversary update. The first thing is for control, more control for the quality updates. We know teams are looking to go through and be able to do these deferrals. We've increased this time frame a little bit. We've also made it easier for you to make it more granular. We know different companies may have differing compliance requirements they have, certain amount of days before quality updates and security updates are applied on these machines. So we offer that flexibility in there. The other feedback item we heard is drivers. And we've heard both sides in two camps on drivers. Some customers want, hey, we have some of the latest and greatest hardware, the drivers that you're delivering, we want in our enterprise. Other customers are on the opposite side saying, once we build an image, once we deploy, we never want you to touch a driver ever again. So we're offering that flexibility to give you that driver support. Then when we look at feature updates, we definitely want you to follow that model. And I'll walk through a little bit as to how you can deal with this. But as Michael was mentioning earlier, is when we think of that insider ring, we think of that CB timeframe, we think of CBB, we know your enterprise is going to deploy to these different rings at different times during that cycle. So what we're doing is we're offering that again, where we have that granularity for you to be able to pick and choose, but also being able to defer out that full timeframe for CBB so you can wait for things to flow through your enterprise. The last thing here is originally when we built Windows Update for Business, we only had it for the CBB branch. Now what we understand is we want you to be able to take advantage of these things on some of the latest and greatest hardware and a more rapid pace with the CB. So we've offered both of these technologies there. And the last one is we know with your existing infrastructure, we want Windows Update for Business to kind of give you some options for your enterprise. It's not an all or nothing proposition. So we do work today with WSUS with dual scan capabilities where you can have devices that get some content from Wu but also get other content from WSUS. So we're trying to integrate with your existing infrastructure so that you can start to pick up and get these things at a much more rapid pace. So Michael talked about this earlier, and I'm going to go through this really quickly. With Windows Update for Business, we want you to be able to, at any point in this cycle, whether it's part of the insiders branch, whether it's part of CB, whether it's CBB, whatever works for you, Windows Update for Business is here to allow you that flexibility to control when things get deployed and to which customers as you carve up your different rings. So let's go into a little bit of the rings. So if you're looking to adopt Windows Update for Business, you're looking to trial it, you're looking to play around with the tools, a couple things to consider. When we call these deployment groups or rings or however teams do it, they have a test environment, then they roll out to broad deployment. Each company is going to do this a little bit differently. So what we think is you should sit down and start to figure out, how am I going to carve up these different groups of people? Am I going to use AD? Am I going to use AAD? Am I going to use some security groups? Or am I going to do some other technology? Because these things are built into the OS, there's a number of different ways you can carve up these groups and keep them going. The next thing is really starting to look at, as we look at quality updates and feature updates, your goals may be to deploy those at completely different rates. We definitely want to offer that flexibility and make it easy. You may want to change your rings to do the quality updates faster, maybe over a couple days, and then those feature updates to be something that happens at a slower pace down the road. And the last thing, as Michael talked about earlier in the slides, is because this is Windows Update and because this is with our cloud-based technologies, we get advantages with what we have with delivery optimization, where you can have this stuff cached on your local network so that not each and every device is downloading this from Wu each and every time. So you'll have this peer-to-peer connection. You also have this notion with dual scan to be able to use some of the tools you have. So what I'm going to walk through now is just a simple configuration as to how this comes together. So let's just say, I have my initial ring here. This is my ring zero. This is my IT department. This is my test environment, whatever it is for you. As you can see, we have group policy for this. It's not just group policy settings for Windows Update for Business. We do have MDM. I'm just showing group policy here as a way to simply show you in the UI. So I have my pilots and my test ring with no deferral. I set up my first ring as my fast ring. And this, I have it as a 5-day deferral. My third ring is my slow ring, and I have this as a 10-day deferral. This is very similar to what we do at the insider branch, where we have fast and slow rings, and I'm trying to just show that as in this example. So a quality update is released. And this comes out on Patch Tuesday. I initially see this on my test devices. This is my IT department. I get to do some of that validation initially as this comes through. Everything looks good. Still, it's still all hands-free. Now that 5-day time frame comes through. It rolls out to that next wave. The 10-day time frame comes in. It rolls out to that last wave. So you've had to do nothing other than set this up, and this is just going to roll through your enterprise, and you can monitor the tools and watch adoption go through all of your machines. So the question that always comes up is, what if something goes south or something goes wrong? So let me walk through that. So let's using the same rings that we had before, an update was released and hit this initial pilot branch. Uh-oh, we found the problem, whatever that problem is. What we have is the ability for you to be able to pause updates. And you can pause all of your rings at once. So now you've paused and you start to look at remediation for what you're going to do for that initial set. You understand what the problem is. You've found out what the solution is, whether it's Microsoft, whether it's something in your environment. Now what you can do is you go through and you unpause these machines. Now those updates go, follow that deferral and find their way through. That's pretty much it. It's very simple, and really it's going hand in hand with this Windows Update for Business and Windows as a Service to really help you move all of your devices and get these updates of quality and feature much faster in your environment. So one of the things I did want to show is, if you're looking for more information, these are in the slides, so you can look for it. There's some demo videos. There's some content that's out there. Also, if you want to reach out to us and kind of do some pilots or anything there, there's some more contact information as well. Thank you.
So let's continue on then and look at the other tools where we can do similar things, starting with WSUS. With WSUS, we have the ability to deploy feature updates. To do that first, I already mentioned you need to install some hot fixes to support that. Those hot fixes, once they're installed, enable you to see a new upgrade category inside of your classification inside your WSUS server. Once you've selected that, it can download the updates, the feature updates for every operating system SKU that you're probably running out there. Education, Enterprise, Pro, all the updates are available out there. So some of you might have tried this in the past, like when we released Windows 10, 15, 11, tried to go into WSUS and approve updates to deploy out to PCs, and there may have been some initial issues. We've worked on getting those clarified and relabeled some of the updates just to make it easier for you to find what you're looking for. But overall, the process is fairly straightforward, so let's walk through it. Let me switch over to my laptop here and just show you what something like that would look like. Again, same basic idea. We want to have a set of rings set up. And in WSUS, we can do that through computer groups. We can create computer groups and then specify when we want to deploy to those computer groups. Now, we don't have the automation, the same type of automation that we would have through Windows Update for Business. This would be more of an administrator-driven process, but at least we can define the rings by creating groups for each population. So maybe we want to start off with a pilot IT group, then move to different early adopter groups before we then shift over to broad deployment. So we separate our PCs into those different groups and we progress through those as we're deploying. Now, WSUS supports doing automatic approvals, and I can specify that for the initial group, I want to automatically approve feature updates as soon as they show up in WSUS so that they begin deploying immediately. I could also specify an auto-approval rule that specifies a different installation deadline, really just to give a longer period of time for those to install. But if you wanted to do anything more complex than that, now you're back to just manually going in and approving. And for that, it's really just going into the upgrades. In this case, I created this search folder myself just to show all the upgrades in one place. I could select the one that I wanted to deploy, in this case, the feature update to Windows 10 Enterprise, version 1607, English US, and then I could approve it, and I just specify then not to approve it for all computers, but to approve it for the group that I want to go next. So if I want to go to the early adopter 2 group, I just need to mark that as approved for install and specify then that I want to go ahead and make that so. So that's the process, that's the type of deployment that you would do through WSUS, which is really no different than what you're doing today for patches. You're just doing this for feature updates the same way that you would do it for quality updates or any of the down level Windows 7 or Windows 8.1 stuff that you're doing today. Now, if we were talking about Configuration Manager, we've got a couple of options with Configuration Manager. Configuration Manager, with their current branch release, implemented a new capability to do servicing plans, which conceptually are very similar to what we talked about for Windows Update for Business. We can predefine rules that specify when should each new quality update or feature update be deployed to PCs in the organization. The focus is on feature updates because those are the bigger thing that actually include new features and introduce more change. So for those, we can lay out the rules, we can populate collections with the PCs that we want to get the updates at different points in time, and then Config Manager will just make it happen. So if we look at that, let me switch over to a Config Manager server. Helps to minimize the right window. And we have kind of a similar setup. Instead of creating computer groups like we did in WSUS, we create collections. Those collections are really just your ring definitions. What PCs should get the deployment at what point in time? So the first step is the collections. The second step then is to specify the servicing plans. So there's a new node in Config Manager current branch called Windows 10 Servicing. We can see the same feature updates that are available in WSUS since Config Manager is actually pulling this through WSUS. And then we can define as many servicing plans as we want. If we look at one of these, like Pilot IT, actually let's just walk through the wizard. If we created a servicing plan, we can call it whatever we want. We can then specify what collection we would want to target. In this case, I've got my rings defined. I could say I want to target IT. And then specify when do I want to do this? Do I want to do this based on current branch or current branch for business? And what delay do I want to use for each one of those, for either of those? So if I specify current branch plus 0, it deploys right away. If I do current branch plus 30, then it's going to wait 30 days after the release shows up in WSUS before it begins to deploy that. Same thing for business ready, current branch for business. It's going to wait until we've declared that this particular release is current branch for business, and then it can specify. You can specify an additional delay to just group your PCs into the rings that we've been talking about. So you go through and you specify those. Really, you don't have to specify much else with this. There are some additional settings that basically tell what distribution points do you want to push it to and what the standard options are for notification and reboots and maintenance windows and all that good stuff in Config Manager. But the basics are just to lay out the servicing plans, and then Config Manager will continue to execute those each time we release a new feature update. So you don't ever have to touch this again. It will just keep deploying. Next feature update that comes out sometime next year, Config Manager will see it show up, it will download it, it'll distribute it out to your DPs, and it will begin walking through each of those servicing plans and executing them at the time that you specified. So you don't ever have to touch it again. If you needed to, you could always pause or temporarily disable that as you address any issues, but it's going to continue to try to do that as automated as possible. I also have, in this other environment, the same type of group policies that Brian was talking about before, set up to target different settings out to different PCs. The helps to be in the right window. So we just, to target those different settings out to different groups of PCs, we just target different GPOs to different groups of machines. We would also use that with WSUS and Config Manager because we use that same mechanism to specify, is this PC supposed to be current branch or current branch for business? So you would use this GPO type structure to do that. You could also do it in Config Manager using their desired state configuration capabilities. But it's really just about putting a registry value on the PC to specify, is this a CB or a CBB machine? So that's the quick run through. I mean, we talked about why, we talked about what, and then we talked about the tools. The process itself, using those tools to set up rings, to set up groups, to do those types of automated or even manual deployments, isn't that bad. So it's more about really the process. We need to make sure we understand the process, how we go about validating applications, validating infrastructure, the timings, the timelines, all of those pieces of it. So making sure you understand all of that so that you can set up a process that works with these tools to go about doing that type of Windows as a service environment. If anyone has any questions, we've got a little bit of time left. There are some microphones somewhere in here. I can't see them because the lights are blinding. But find a microphone. Otherwise, we'll hang around up front for a few minutes. So the question was, if I'm using System Center Configuration Manager, the registry change to indicate current branch versus current branch for business, is exactly that same policy that Brian was talking about. You, on Windows 10, 15, 11, you would go in and configure the defer upgrades and updates policy. If it's enabled, it's current branch for business. If it's not enabled, it's current branch. On 1607, we broke that up into separate policy, so I can specify a policy for feature updates that specify current branch or business, and the deferral settings. Config Manager doesn't use the deferral settings. Those are only used for Windows Update for Business, but it does use the other setting to indicate, is this a CB or a CBB machine? So you'll see both of those settings in the group policy editor under Windows Updates. So look under Windows Updates, you'll see the defer upgrade and update on 1511. You'll see an additional folder containing the settings on 1607.
Can we raise the light, make it easier to, the crowd's really dark for people asking questions.
Next one over here. So, I can at least see that there's someone standing there.
Silhouette.
Yeah. So Michael, can you kind of compare or contrast the Windows 10 servicing model with using a task sequence to basically to deploy the next branch WIM.
So compare Windows 10 servicing in Config Manager with the task sequence-based approach?
Right.
Yeah, they're similar in the end result. They're both going to be performing the same in-place upgrade process to deploy a feature update. What they're doing differently are two things. One is the task sequence allows you to do pre-processing and post-processing. So you can run some steps before, some steps after. The other difference is that the task sequence is using media. So you'd have to download the media from VLSC, get the ISO, extract the contents, and distribute that. Whereas the servicing plan is using the ESD files, the Windows Update packages that have been downloaded through WSUS and distributed through Config Manager. Those files are actually a little smaller, so using the servicing plan approach will result in a slightly smaller size because they're compressed differently.
So specifically, any configurability with the servicing plan, injecting specific drivers at the time of update, or you would have to go with the task sequence approach?
Yeah, if you want more flexibility around scheduling or doing any of those pre and post configuration options, then yes, you'd have to use the task sequence-based approach.
Okay, sorry.
Hi. Two things. One is I'm related to the content. The slide deck attached to my conference is not the right one. And since I download slide decks because I can't take a picture worth a darn, it'd be nice if that could get corrected.
Okay, we can look at that.
Thank you. The other thing, with respect to software as a service, Windows as a service, would you recommend, when it comes to the CBB and the broader adoption, would you recommend a self-service type? And then give them like a deadline saying, okay, if you have not pulled the updates by X time, we'll push them, or?
We have seen customers that have implemented self-service models and have had a fair amount of success with it. Basically, as soon as they're comfortable with making it available to people who are willing to self-select, great, they'll make it available. Now, that doesn't eliminate the need for the push model, because there are a lot of people who would just never be bothered to do such a thing. So a combination of the two works pretty well, especially with Config Manager, where you can enable that self-service.
Okay. And my last question is, where do we see this going as far as having the smaller packages available for an update model versus the bare metal task sequence?
Yeah, our expectation is that the process will remain as is, so the feature updates will continue to install the way they install today. We are looking at mechanisms to potentially reduce the size a little bit, but not drastically. So it'll still be a pretty big package, but we will work over time to try to reduce the size.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I think mine are pretty quick. In the upgrade analytics, what are the thresholds between insufficient data, adopted, and highly adopted?
I don't have them memorized, but I believe if you look at it in the Ready for Windows site, it will show you a legend for what those labels mean. It's something like hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands. You'd have to break it down that way, but I believe it's in the website.
Okay, and then the other question is, when using the peer-to-peer sharing, what is the performance trade-off for those devices that are participating in the sharing?
I'd say it depends. If you look at delivery optimization as an example, it will only pick very capable PCs. So it'll look for PCs that have sufficient disk space, that have certain memory. It'll require at least 4 gig of RAM, but it tries to pick PCs that are well suited for sharing that content. Branch cache is a little different. Branch cache is going to send out broadcasts, and whoever responds back the quickest, it'll start talking to those PCs. So there are configuration options available for branch cache, for delivery optimization, to influence that behavior, to cause it to pick some PCs over another. The Config Manager model that they're looking at implementing for their peer-to-peer is more declarative. So you can declare super peers to say, these are the machines that I want to use for sharing content to other PCs, so that it only impacts that smaller subset of PCs. Generally, it tries to throttle that traffic down so it's not going to be noticeable to the person sitting at the machine. If you're using modern hardware, that should be no problem. If you're trying to do sharing with a six-year-old laptop that has a 5400 RPM hard drive on it, yeah, you're probably going to notice. But for most modern hardware, it should be fairly quiet.
Is it possible to say that this set of devices should not ever participate in peer-to-peer? Can you segment them out?
In the case of delivery optimization and peer cache, branch cache, you can configure both of those via group policy, right. So target different group policies to the different groups of PCs. Config Manager should be able to achieve the same thing through client settings.
Okay, thank you.
Right. My question is about the update for business. Do you have any sort of tools to report on the compliance, considering that we have Config Manager as a setup at this moment, but then if you move to an update as a business, you're just going to manage it through a group policy, and how would you report the compliance on the...
We're working with Intune, SCCM, and then OMS to provide reporting layers for that, so that you get all of that reporting back, either through the tools that you're already using or with some new cloud-based tools.
All right, it's work in progress at this moment.
Yeah.
Great, thank you.
Question one is, it sounds like if we just keep up on our feature updates, then we will be on the most current stuff with the most current toys, provided we're not on long-term servicing branch. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's the goal with the current branch for business Windows as a service model. As long as you continue to deploy the feature updates, you're current.
Okay, then the only other question is, on a reasonably modern machine, what's the longest you would expect a feature update to take? Because I'm thinking about my chain of command, and if they go to restart their machine and installs a feature update and it suddenly takes 4 hours, that might not go well.
Yeah, I think most upgrades are within an hour. That's the rough time frame. It's not going to be 4 hours. It's much more efficient than that.
Okay.
The timing varies. I've seen it take as little as 15 minutes, and for older hardware, maybe it gets up to an hour and a half, but it should be in that range.
Now, that's downloading stage doesn't impact the user from being able to continue using that machine. So the early processes of that setup, the user can still do what they're doing.
Okay.
Hi. You've already answered some of my questions regarding the peer-to-peer. One question I have, though, is we have a very mobile workforce, so people on laptops, in and out of the office, on the road a lot. In that sort of environment, does peer-to-peer work well? If someone's in the office for an hour and then they leave and they're in the middle of either sharing or receiving updates from other peers and people are VPN'd in most of the time, how would peer-to-peer work in that kind of environment?
So peer-to-peer, if I'm understanding your question, how does peer-to-peer, if I'm on a laptop and I'm on the road bouncing around?
Yeah, I'm in the office 1 minute, and then, you know, just for like an hour, and then I'm like in the middle of getting updates from my peers, and then I leave the office because I have to catch a plane to Dubai.
What happens is the way the peer-to-peer will work is if there's not a peer available to get that update, it's going to go up to Woo to try and get that update. So if it can't find a peer to get it from, it's going to connect and pull it down from Woo. So if you're bouncing around between networks, it depends on what you're talking to at that point.
Depending on the tools, too. With Config Manager, the behavior is going to be different versus branch cache or delivery optimization. Mm-hmm. Delivery optimization is all internet-based, so regardless of where you're connected to the internet, it's going to find a peer. Branch cache is only going to find peers when you're connected to the corporate network. Config Manager has options, so just depends on how you've configured Config Manager.
And delivery optimization has two settings, one for only on my local LAN or WAN-based machines as well.
All right, thank you.
Windows Update for Business, that doesn't have any peer-to-peer functionality, does it?
Windows Update for Business does use the delivery optimization that's built into the OS.
Okay, so that does being on Windows Update for Business doesn't disable that other functionality.
That it depends on it. Delivery optimization, you could turn off delivery optimization if you wanted, but peer-to-peer is a good thing, so you want to use that with Windows Update for Business, and it's enabled by default.
Okay. Correct.
I work for a nonprofit. We are very fragmented environment. I'm talking about 200 sites, and most of these sites are one PC. To give you an example, I've got one in Chinle on Navajo Reservation. It's 5 hours away from Phoenix. If something happens to that PC, I've got to drive there and pick it up and so forth. How would you recommend to go about this specific example in updating? We only have direct access to manage those PCs, and I mean, what would be the best way to go about this one?
So you have PCs in offices of one that are connected via direct access, so their internet connection.
Windows Update for Business seems like a great candidate for that.
Simplest one.
Yeah.
There's no need to pull that content then from your corporate network through direct access. Instead, you can just point the PCs directly to Windows Update and have them download all the content from our content distribution network.
But you can still control when and how those machines get it by using the policies that are there via MDM or group policy to say, I only want these machines to get feature updates 10 days after they're released and quality updates too. You still have those controls even though they're internet-based.
All right. Thank you.
Yep.
Two questions. First has to do with your slide about pausing updates. So let's say I pause the three rings in your example, and 8 days later I unpause that. Do the PCs delay their patching based on when I've unpaused or based on when the patch was released?
It calculates when the patch was released.
Okay, so if I take 8 days, I unpause everybody, the second and third and fourth rings could potentially go if they...
The one that was 5 days would go as soon as you unpause, it would scan and it would now be applicable.
Right.
You'd wait 2 days for that 10-day, but that's all.
If I took like 3 weeks to remediate it, all those rings would go immediately?
Potentially, yes.
Okay. And then my second question is, has to do with defer upgrades for feature upgrades. If I have checked defer upgrade for a particular ring and said delay 3 months, Is that delay from CBB date or from current branch release?
If you've selected defer upgrades, which puts you onto CBB, it's defer from that CBB point forward. It's not from the original.
For example, if my first ring says defer and delay 2 months, then current branch is released. 4 months later, current branch for business is released. 2 months later is my
correct.
Awesome.
And just for the, when you unpause, so what happens with that is that that calculates applicability of the update.
Sure.
So now that update can be applied. That doesn't mean that update is going to happen that exact time.
Right.
Depending on how the person's using the machine, active hours, reboot policies, all of those other things come into play. So it's not going to be I unpause, my whole entire network goes on a reboot.
No, I ask because my first ring is delayed 2 months, which would be in, what, like 3 days?
Yep.
So I want to know if it's 3 days or in another couple months. So
yep.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
I think we need to get off the stage. But any other questions, find us up front.
Thank you.
Thanks.